Well, good afternoon. Welcome. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also on freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, March 8th, 2016, and my guest on today, because it is Tuesday, it's Intel Tuesday for the first hour, is Managing Editor of Veterans Today, Jim Dean. Jim, welcome, sir.
Glad to be back once again.
Glad to have you.
Another busy day and another busy week. The world does not stop moving.
No, it doesn't. So what do you think? What are the priorities? What do people need to be informed of and to focus on this week?
I'm going to start out with something that I saw just before I came on. The prosecutor in the Oregon shooting made his formal report, their press conference today on the Lavoie Finnegan. Six shots were fired during the arrest, three into the car and three into Mr. Finnegan. And they claim all six shots were justified. They included a diagram. He had one shot in the far upper right shoulder, one a little bit left of it. And one looked like down to the left side of his belly button, but they said that one shot went through the heart. So the only way I could see that happening is one of the upper shoulder shots was from somebody in an elevated position, like a sniper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also they said all shots were in the back because he had turned around toward that, but they basically the gist of what they were, he was told to be still, and he was going for his gun. And the second time he reached for his pocket, that seemed to be the red line. He did not say that.
Well, Jim, one of the things that I've noticed is any time law enforcement is involved with an armed suspect, the first thing they tell them to do is drop your weapon. Whether it's a knife, whether it's a gun, whether it's in your hand, in a holster, the first thing is drop your weapon. So if he was moving to drop his weapon and they shot him for that, that seems sort of, tough.
Well, actually, they turned out he actually never got his weapon out. He had one in his inside left coat pocket, which from their intelligence they were aware of. And if you look at the video, you'll see him bring his hands down. One time he kind of like goes and then changes his mind and he turns around. We don't know from the audio yet. But then just before they shot him, he's turning around because there was one guy up on the left up in the woods. And you can clearly see his back is kind of toward the camera. But, you know, he brought his hand and went around. And that's when they... and then he was coming, it was almost like he was coming out. So, but the good part about it is they said that they were going to be releasing the underlying evidence, which he made the conclusion, and that was going to include new video. Because in some of my earlier reporting, I said they typically would have video on the ground, because in a really high-profile arrest like this, when you know there could be a shooting, you know that no matter what happens, you're going to be accused of murder and whatever. And really, for self-defense, the authorities usually now try to have a good, solid video of what happened. And in the article I just put up on VT, I said I hope that they really have an audio track of what went on, what commands he was given, what he actually said, that can be heard, because I think that's the only way this is going to be put to bed, that people can kind of hear and see. And I'm hoping that the ground level cameras will give us a much better view. So again, a person's dead. Now all these people are arrested. Families are going to be affected for years. None of them have any money. So, they got all kinds of trouble. Their community on the internet is looking, and the lawyers are going to make a fortune on this because these cases will go on for, you know how it is, pretrial and more of this and hearings and huge evidence files, which cost an attorney just to read the collected evidence is like, you know, $10,000 worth of time.
It's going to cost you 10, 20 grand just in billable hours doing that.
Yeah, yeah, just to do that. And so it's just a disaster, and everyone's going to find out that it's not fun. And as I put in my editor's note, I would advise folks that armed occupations are really not a good idea. Because you know, they're really not there have to be better ways to proceed, because you're just playing into their strength. The government is and the public is not going to want to basically stand for armed occupations. What a lot of these guys didn't know is making threats when you're holding weapons to federal officers is felony.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a protest. A protest is when you chain yourself and you refuse to leave and you get arrested.
You do like you Gandhi. You do like Gandhi, nonviolent.
Yeah. You know,
if you want to run an IRA style war against the federal authorities, that's a different story. These guys, you know, you go to the IRA style full scale guerrilla war against the government, or you do peaceful protests, but this slicing the baby in the middle and doing an armed protest, it seemed like a formula for a disaster. The only thing that really gets me is, you know, what was this guy, Finicum, thinking that here he pulls up to, what, 6, 8, 10 police officers, 4 or 5 police vehicles. What is he going to do, quick draw and out shoot them? I don't think so. I don't think that's ever going to happen. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Jim, this thing still stinks.
Yep.
I'm not buying the see, the government has done so much over so many years to lie to me about everything that I don't believe anything that they say anymore. Just like today, I read the numbers that we've got 95 million people who are not, but unemployment is less than 5%. So that means we have to have over 1 billion people living in this country. excuse me.
It's good for the grocery stores, that's for sure.
it would, but like I said, the government lies so often and so thoroughly that everything they say now at every level is challenged because no one's buying their baloney anymore, you know?
Oh yeah, in these big profile cases, all these prosecutors know that they have to have some very convincing material to put out unless they want it to just go on and on and on. I was going to move next on to an update on the ceasefire. The good news is the ceasefire is holding in Syria. At least it's good for the good guys. The bad guys are unhappy about it. Including even the U.S., because Russia is coming out the winner on the ceasefire, and that's because they and the Syrians, the boots on the ground and the air cover, that the whole world now knows who was really the anti-terror coalition when it came to Syria and Iraq, who got the job done. Because now the ceasefire violations, that's all being coordinated through the Russian base, because they're the only ones that really have the capacity to do it. They've got the people, they've got the skills, the equipment, and they've got their really high tech. They can pick up where mortars are being fired from. The type of stuff when you're going to use counter battery fire. So they're having all that in. And then the really good news is they're having more and more the opposition groups kind of signed on fairly quickly, because they wanted to be on the do not bomb list. And then they also wanted to be on the food list. But then they had a lot of the elders in the areas that had been opposition towns. They also wanted to sign a ceasefire agreement, agree to let the Syrian government come back in and establish government control. And then the thing that really surprised people is they also asked not the U.S., not NATO, but they asked, and not even really Syria, they asked for the Russians to protect them from retribution from ISIL.
Well, those are the guys who get the job done, you know?
Yeah, because they realize they're the only people that could really protect them.
Well, here's the deal. The U.S. military, I mean, we make all this noise, we make all this bluster about, you know, we have the greatest military in the world, and we do this, and we've got very fine men and women serving in there. We've got many flaws within the U.S. military. We have policy flaws. We have leadership flaws. We have weapon system flaws in there that really make the U.S. military more of a toothless old hound and less of a wolf. Nothing that'll compete with the Russian bear. And you know, you just look at how malmanaged our military has been. It's been malmanaged for the purpose of profiting the war profiteers, and that's, you know, that's just how I see it. So
the war is continuing on because there's plenty of al-Nusra and ISIL people that are still fighting, and the Syrian army and the Russians are very happy to give it to them. The Russians have actually taken a few days off on the air campaign. They're wanting they're kind of focusing now. They think it's better we can go kill the jihadis later, but they want to help get the emergency supplies into some of the extended areas. So, but we're going to be watching carefully the Idlib area in the northwest. That's the main command center for al-Nusra / Turkey. Turkey has their command center. It's southwest of Aleppo. And that's the Syrians are preparing to move on that next. And of course, where we're going to have the showdown is once the Syrian army can get redeployed north, is how far up are they going to push to the Syrian border to close it and completely close off being able to supply the jihadis inside Syria. And Lavrov and several more people are coming out now and saying, we cannot really continue a political process when people who are a party to the political process are supplying a terrorist war that's continuing going on. That was a direct message to Turkey and to Saudi Arabia.
And that's exactly the position that the Russians should be in, and that's the position the U.S. should have but does not.
Yep. And this past week or last 4 days or so, we're not hearing any silly stuff with the Saudis about the ground troops coming in, and you're not hearing much. The Turks are continuing to do some shelling because they want to keep up the morale of some of their terrorist proxy forces. They have tried to capture some towns, some key border towns from the Kurds, and they have been unsuccessful. So either they've decided that the ceasefire, that they watched and saw that the a lot of the opposition groups were laying down their weapons, that they were really going to be a small group. And I think what they're doing now is they're just going to sacrifice al-Nusra and what's left of ISIL to buy some time to try to figure out what they want to do. Turkey has kind of pivoted. They're worried a little bit about the home front. They're really cracking down on the media. They just closed down the big opposition newspaper, the Zalman. And then today they closed down another one. So they're right in the middle of, while they're trying to get into the EU, which I'm going to cover in a minute. So then we had...
Hang on, Jim. Let's go back to one fundamental point here. So they're going to sacrifice al-Nusra. They're going to sacrifice ISIL. And so what they're going to kill, 8, 10, 12,000 jihadis. Big deal. That's not the problem. The problem is getting to the people who are supplying the material support to those jihadis. These jihadis don't buy their own ammunition. They don't buy their own weapons. They don't buy their own meals. And as long as the people who are providing the material support are still out there, both governmental groups and private groups who are doing this, we're still going to have problems wherever they go, because there's always some poor schlub out there who needs a job, and he'll take anything to support his family or himself to buy a hot meal. We're always going to have this problem until we root out the core and those who provide the material support. That is the underlying message here, folks.
Well, and what you're going to see happening here, and this will help Assad, is if they can start getting people back into their towns, start rebuilding, start getting, and I'm seeing the Russians are going to be very involved. I sense that they're going to be bringing in engineers to help, and this is all going to accrue to Syria and the Russian coalition, which is going to help. And I think the bad guys are seeing that's just going to really help their stature when it comes to the negotiations. And this is why Assad is pushing for parliamentary elections in April, because he wants to go ahead and say, let's count heads now. Let's not wait, till next fall or next spring, a year from now. Let's go ahead and get kind of a head count now who people are kind of supporting, and that because I think he knows that that's going to put an end. You're going to see how little support these opposition groups have, and of course France and some of these other places, they don't want to do that because they know damn well what's going to happen. The on the ground support for the opposition is going to come in at somewhere between 5% and 10%, and then they're sitting
Maybe
there doing.
less, maybe
Maybe
less.
less, yeah. And then they're sitting there demanding that they get their way on everything. They know that the public, they're not going to have any public support. And their supporters, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the US, they know that they're going to be playing a weak hand there. And it's also, they're going to be in the untenable position that there was never a lot of support. It's going to make it easier for us to go at them, that this was a totally outside, it started with inside people, but it never would have reached the devastating scale that it did, literally throwing gasoline on a fire without all of the ruthless, vicious, higher up people that just decided, hey, we can finally take advantage of this and maybe score one of our color revolutions and carve up deals here again. So our job is to not just stop what happened, but as you mentioned, the guilty, who did stuff and why, we've got to see to it that that does not get swept under the rug in the process.
But one thing I've not heard you say today, one thing I've not heard you mention, and hanging out with guys like Gordon and Jim Hankey, I learned to hear what people say, but I also learned to hear what they don't say. And I haven't heard you mention any word about Israel yet, because we know Israel's up to their eyeballs in this thing, and they're off the front page right now on this.
Well, they
And
have actually something happened to have them go quiet, and we and they had gone quiet before they came out against Turkey, and it wasn't over the Mavi Marmara, which they've been quietly negotiating a settlement on that. But they something I don't know who, the story behind it yet, but they went very quiet. There had been no Golan Heights escalations. They have done nothing to kind of stir up. They're not really even saying very much. So that's a story in itself. Gordon's got some views on that, but they're thinking now that trying to buddy up and have Turkey take over Syria. They began looking at this Turkish new Ottoman Empire is maybe a much more dangerous threat than any Syria could ever be. Because Turkey's going to end up being a base. Can you think of a better place for all the jihadis in the world who want to move to is Turkey? Can you think of a more accommodating, even if they get pushed out of Syria, the ones that retreat, they're going to go to Turkey. And I think Turkey will be want to use it, using these guys for mayhem for years to come if they don't get what they want. And already we see they're starting to move some up to Ukraine and
Yeah,
start
move up to
messing.
UK, move up to Ukraine, move all throughout all of Europe, and create mayhem and terrorism everywhere under the sun throughout Europe.
So the counterterrorism campaign, once it settles down in Syria, there's a possibility that we may see that having to be moved to other places. And we haven't heard a word about state-sponsored terrorism yet. The UN doesn't like to talk about that. But we've got, I think, what is it, the 9th, tomorrow, they're supposed to get back and start up the talks. And 2 days ago, the main Saudi Arabian opposition group, the one that had been making all the preemptive, the preconditioned demands and whatever, they got the message and they've agreed to come. And of course, they've kind of surrendered their Assad must go. And although the Saudi foreign minister, he was still crowing that a couple of days ago that, if the people really want to show that they're interested in having real negotiations, Assad has to step down now. Like he's going to step down now after lasting.
That's a lose-lose for Syria. Lose-lose for the Syrian people. Yeah. I mean, why would they negotiate? Assad must go. He's been what's held the country together throughout this. Let's call it. It's a proxy war. Let's just call it for what it is. It's what it is. It's a proxy war disguised as jihadis.
Yep. So the good news there, particularly for the people on the ground, they're getting a little bit of a respite, which they sorely need. And then it also can be good for Europe and the refugees that people can start moving back in because everybody wants to see. And then I think once things kind of collate here at the right time, I think the Syrian army and the Russians will have popular support inside Syria and possibly outside of Syria to go ahead and finish these guys off. Okay, let's not drag this out over 12 months and let them just make more and more people miserable and blow up more places and blow up more archaeological sites. Let's just have an all-out total war on these guys for 90 days. Kill everybody and get it over with. So we've got warm weather, we can start rebuilding. And I think that's what they're looking for. But they want to have a groundswell of people screaming for that. We don't want to be tormented and have this thing dragged out. We want to have everybody to be able to vote. And before they can do that, they have to be freed from ISIL and al-Nusra control. So I'm seeing that as kind of the strategy. But as you know, Mike, in this game, you can't get ahead of the game too far. You got to make sure the people are behind you and you've got support. And the Russians have been very, very careful about that.
Well, Putin is quite the chess player.
And Lavrov has done a good deal. And then, and of course, you've also had the public admissions by Obama and then even NATO. They had really nothing but comments for the professionalism and capability that the Russian forces have shown in running this campaign. I was quite surprised to see them do that. I mean, it was really kind of undeniable, but somebody must have pressed the button and said that if the U.S. and Russia are going to be in charge of the ceasefire and they're going to be handling violations and whatever, they need to present a public face that they're not at loggerheads with each other and not making those snide remarks. Although they did have one come out not too long after it came up. Some dummy at the White House said, well, the Russians got to put up or shut up now. Like they hadn't been putting up.
What do you think they've been doing since September 28th?
We're really going to see where their heads are at now, on whether they try to trick us or whether they're going to keep bombing the opposition. Like, well, why would they want to bomb opposition that's decided to not fight anymore? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, why would they want to waste bombs on opposition groups when they can use them on al-Nusra and ISIL?
Exactly. And Jim, we've got our first break, so stick around, folks. Be right back. More of the Jim Dean right after this short break. Be right back. Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also on freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio, Today is Tuesday, March 8th, 2016, and our guest is managing editor of Veterans Today, Mr. Jim Dean. Jim, welcome back, sir.
Glad to be back. And going to move on to part
okay.
Turkey. Shifting from the ceasefire, we'll go to the refugee war. And boy, that really came to head yesterday. We had the EU-Turkish meeting in Brussels. And what a showdown at the OK Corral that turned out to be. Turkey showed up alone and seems to have outshot all 28 of the other EU nations. What they agreed, they came up with this very strange agreement. They've got all of these people blocked in Greece. I think off the top of my head, maybe about 20,000, that the Balkan states said we are not going to let them into our countries without a destination date arranged for them, because then they'll end up staying here. So they've agreed to say they're going to send all of those. Turkey said it would take all of them back. And then what they would do is swap them for another 20,000 who would be pre-certified Syrian refugees. So what they were doing in a way, which was good, is finding a way to give refugee status priority to the people who really need it, which are the Syrians, and hopefully women, more women and children and old people, rather than all the draft dodgers. So that was kind of an interesting approach, and I guess Turkey had agreed to do that. And of course, after the meeting was over, somebody kind of said, gee, how do they think they're really going to round up these 20,000 people who don't really want to go back to Turkey? So so that was step one. And then Turkey said that it was going to want another $3 billion, the $3 billion that supposedly already is committed. They wanted another 3 billion euros on top of that. That's up to 6 billion. So, and then they wanted their free visa thing to not go into tentatively into effect in October, but to definitely go into effect in June. So then in the process they were going to have is they were hopefully with the Syrian war toning down and all of this money that they could keep the refugees where they are, at least from that area of the world. And then hopefully with the political negotiations going on, people won't be looking to flee as heavily. But of course, they're always going to flee. A lot of these people don't want to go back to a ravaged country where towns are completely destroyed and basically live like rats, pretty much. I mean, everything's been just blown to pieces. They want to get out any way that they can. So, and you had the EU, and but what nobody was really thinking about is Turkey now is kind of on the mats economically. Their tourism business is completely trashed. They've been using farming the Syrian refugees for all the typical odd jobs, and everybody that's been let out of the camps is scrambling around trying to get any little jobs that they can. And now the Turkish economy is hurting. So now, even if they're able to stem the Mideast, quote, refugees going into the EU, they are now going to have a deluge, and I would say easily of several million Turks, that once they can get a visa to the EU, particularly in the hard economic times, it's going to be bye-bye Turkey, and you're going to, so what the Erdogan's doing, they'll replace these other refugees with Turks. So he's going to be able to flood all kinds of Turks in there. And you can imagine the Turkish IDs he's going to be printing out to these ISIL guys that are retreating from Syria. And then he's going to have his own people there. He's going to be basically shifting part of his population.
Jim, let me point something out here, because we're talking about how the Turkish economy is on the ropes. yes, the general economy of Turkey is on the ropes. However, Erdogan and his people have made more money than God off of this thing. Yes. All the revenue from the stolen oil, the artifacts, the human trafficking, the smuggling, the drugs, all of it. They're making a lot of money. So what Erdogan's doing is he's taking his problem people who might, because they're poor now because they lost everything from his mismanagement, and shunting them into Europe. He's burden shifting his problem and making it a European problem.
Right.
Whereas he's sitting up there, king of the hill, fat, dumb, and happy with a pile of money. And you know the only end game here that's going to have any satisfaction is when Erdogan is removed. Not if, when.
And so, but he's trying to now, shore himself up there, showing, you know, that he's kind of whipped the, pulled negotiated the EU here, and the U.S. has completely been kind of neutralized on it. NATO's not pressuring him at all. So everybody was smiling about this. Of course, Cameron, he said, we've got nothing to do with it because we're not taking any of these refugees. So we're hoping EU doesn't destroy itself. So that's everybody was kind of hunky-dory, but that is going to be a big shift when and you talk about a criminal organization. And of course, we know that when Ukraine ever gets the visa thing, you know, they kind of want that also so they can get rid of some of their people. You're going to have the Ukrainian criminal gangs move into the EU, and those are some bad boys.
Let me point something out about the Ukrainian criminal gangs. It's the mafia, but it's not the Russian mafia. These are not in Ukraine. They are Jewish. They are Khazarians. Let me tell you, I've been there 6-8 times. I know who these guys are. I know what they are. These are not the Russian population or the Russian ethnic population that's doing this. This is same as it is in Detroit, same as it is in Chicago, same as it is in New York. This is Jewish organized crime. End of discussion. And they're going to put these guys and turn them loose throughout all of Europe. And these are the baddest of the bad. This is Murder Incorporated all over again.
And you talk about mayhem. And, of course, Mike, you know Gordon's stories about, you know, what a joke police forces are in Europe. I mean, in France, typically they don't carry any guns. So if you're getting robbed or mugged or something like that, you know, and you go up to a policeman, they'll just kind of shrug their shoulders and say, well, you know, what do you expect me to do? You know, I'm a beat cop. And the same in Germany. Most of the police in Germany, you don't see them on the street. There's no real beat cops. They don't patrol. And everybody,
they are there to give the illusion of order.
Yep. So the real toughs immigrants that come in, they see what this is, and Gordon will just go on and on about no matter how poor basically a person is or lower middle class, they will have a front door that typically only rich people can afford. It'll typically be of at least 100 pounds. That two people with sledgehammers cannot knock down. And he said, and the lock alone probably weighs about 12 pounds.
You know, Jim, I've been to Ukraine, like I said, a number of times. I've rented flats there. I've been to flats that are owned by friends of mine over there. And typically what you will have a front door that is a good inch thick of plate steel. It is an inch thick of plate steel, at least an inch thick. You will have at least 6 hinges on one side, 3 to 4 locks on the other. Once you have that door open, behind that is another wooden door, which also has 3-4 hinges on one side and 3 or 4 locks on the other. And then once you're in, if everyone is in for the evening on the steel door, they'll have a bar that slides into brackets so that they have an additional thing. So even if they are hitting with the sledgehammer, you've got this bar across there, and the same on the inner door. But every residence that I was ever in Ukraine has that, because there's some bad actors on the loose over there. And this is that Khazarian mafia I talk about all the time. This is them. And, you know, whenever anybody says, oh, it's the Russian mob, you know, they may live in Russia, but they're not Russians. They're Khazarians, you know, and we know what they are. So anyway, I digress.
But that way you bring up a good point, because we've been kind of always wondering about, you know, why does it seem that the EU is rolling over for this obviously destabilization campaign that someone's wanting to try to do? And of course, you don't see the public doing that much. When there was opposition to this waves of immigrants coming in without being pre-screened, it's not that, you know, Germany and these places, they've always had immigrants coming in. They've had refugees coming in. They've had Muslims coming in. But there's been a screening process that usually took place before, and it was kind of controlled. But then Merkel went to this mass, you know, opening the floodgates, and we'll find out about who they are and whatever. And of course, what happened in Germany, the last figures I saw, that 13% of all those that came in disappeared. And the definition for that was they didn't show up where they had been assigned free housing. Okay, I'm going to repeat that to folks. These are people that did not show up, hopefully refugees, no money, needing to get on the dole and whatever. You know, they were there to sit around and not do anything. They just disappeared. So obviously, they had friends or they had places to go to. 13%, that's like 150,000. Now, that is a security nightmare. That's people that have come in that have already gone underground. And the German police, they don't have, and this is kind of what you do with this thing. You overwhelm any kind of law enforcement forces to where they're just completely overwhelmed keeping up with daily activity. And then you've got your key people hiding behind all of that smoke screen. And it's very, very much, much less dangerous for them to operate in that type of a situation. So we just see this as just absolute, just total insanity, what they seem to be just allowing to happen, almost like someone is kind of steering it.
Well, why don't they just say no? I mean, why what prevents the Europeans from saying, hey, no, you Muslims, you don't belong here. This is our country. We've lived here since the beginning of time. You haven't. You need to leave. And start throwing them out. I mean, and then you go after anyone who hires them, anyone who provides housing, cut off all benefits for them, and make them leave. The same thing we should be doing in this country to our illegal population.
Well, they just seem to haven't really gotten that from the public yet. Most of the protests have been small, and the only organized protests they had were from the far right party, which the state media just went after them, and that kind of intimidated people going out. And,
yeah. Everybody's afraid of being called a Nazi. You know, yep. I mean, it's you must be a Nazi. You know, tell you what, you know, that just kills me. They have been so effective in demonizing that brand forever that just even a whisper. Oh, you must be a Nazi. It's, you know, come on. What are you going to do, call me names? So what? I'm going to do what's right for my country, for my people, for my culture, and these people need to leave.
So it hasn't really happened. And but then that said, they were really concerned. They were working to keep the Schengen open because they did have those Balkan countries that said, we're basically out of it. You know, we are not going to allow these people to be passed through, because technically what they were saying is once these refugees were issued paperwork anywhere, they could go wherever, and they just said no, we don't want to go with that. So they were really kind of up. They did kind of force, and this really put Turkey in the kingmaker seat there, because they Turkey had them boxed in, and that's why Turkey flooded the Saudis. This is part of the Saudis put some of the money up. The gangsters, they just shook all these people down for their boat fees over to Greece. And they're just exploiting the hell out of this thing. And of course, the leaders, they always want to, like putting lipstick on a pig. Nobody wants to admit that they're, not only did they create the situation to begin with, but they're absolutely clueless to how to fix it. So somebody comes up with some kind of a smoke screen, kind of a wallpaper type thing. They say, oh, this will get you over, and then you can claim victory. And then later, if it falls apart, you can blame that on somebody else. And that, folks, is kind of what the modern leadership is pretty much about. You want to get through to Friday, the end of the week, and then if everything falls apart, you have convenience. You have people on your staff that find scapegoats for you. So I'm happy that Syria is going to get a little break, but I think the people in Europe are going to be living some pain for not ponying up to the table, as you say, and accepting responsibility for what's going on there.
Well, one of the things I discussed with the Minister of Justice, you were in the office when we discussed this, is that Syria can't afford to lose a generation of their young people. Yeah. They need them back. They need them to build a new economy after this war is over. Because if you lose a generation, Syria is going to remain in a weakened state for the next 25, 30 years. Yep. So Syria has to somehow create an attractive enough atmosphere to get these people to want to come home, to want to participate, to want to rebuild and strengthen their country. And that was a very open and frank, because human capital, it's great to have resources. It's great to have natural resources. It's great to have gold and oil and, you know, copper and, you know, all kinds of things. But the thing that is of greatest value to every country is their human capital. And I see where many of these countries just miss that boat entirely. They just miss the concept.
The yep, we've got to, people are going to have to, they think they can keep their heads down and play it safe. And what they just don't realize is, you know, it's like they come and they take one of your kids one day and you deal with it by saying, well, you know, I saved the others, you know.
And then the next week they come back. Now you sound like Sophie's Choice.
Then they take another one. And speaking of that, taking kids, just a quick update on the Scalia case. We are getting traction on the international pedophilia story. And by traction, I mean because of what we've published and what we hope will happen when we do stuff like this that corporate media passes on, we start having people feed us more information. So this is a story. I can tell folks that it is building. We're getting more information, particularly from people in a position to know in Europe. And whereas it may be swept under the rug in corporate media, folks know that we can't keep the story going unless we get some more material. So we're hoping to have some follow-up stories there. And at some point, we can force corporate media to review why they didn't do more on the Scalia case, which it looks like they've just decided they're on board of shutting the thing down.
Well, let's look at it. You know, corporate media is controlled by the same people who control everything else, and the pedophiles got their hooks in it, and they're diverting the attention. That's what they do. We need new media in this country. We need a revolution in this country. Hopefully, a revolution of ideas and of morality, instead of a fight and, you know, bullets, guns, blood type revolution. But we need to clean house here.
Well, it's springtime, so that's a good time of year.
Absolutely, it is springtime, and it's time for some spring cleaning in the good old USA. We need to clean house. We need to root out the corruption. We need to get rid of the drug traffickers. We need to get rid of the illegal immigrants. We need to get rid of the pedophiles and all the corruption that goes with Wall Street and banking and everything else. I mean, how much longer are we going to tolerate this level of, I can't say incompetence, but this level of malevolence toward the American people?
Probably going to wrap up with Ukraine here and maybe a little bit on the Iran ballistic missile test firing today.
Okay.
But what's happening in Ukraine, we see strengthening all along the front line. We're seeing moves where the Kiev government is basically on pins and needles in terms of imploding. And we don't think that they will let that happen without starting cranking the war up one more time. As a way of forcing, creating a situation where they'll do something to make the West come in. You have these right sector idiots and the gray wolves from Turkey. And then you have the interior minister said he's creating a special unit to retake Crimea, you know. And I'm going to say, well, boy, that's going to have to be a pretty big unit, you know. Yeah,
good luck with that.
I said, I haven't heard of, what is that, is that multiple army unit or something like that? So, you know, they're kind of stimulating that. But what we see, and this has happened before, is when you're down and out and you need, and your people are all divisive and they hate the government and everybody's fighting and you can't put a coalition together. What do they want? They want to start a war, and they would want to do something bad enough to force the Russians possibly to come in. They do something so bad that the Russians, because those are Russian people there in that area. A lot of people forget this. They say, well, they're pro-Russian. And I said, well, you know, they're pro-Russian for a very good reason.
Because they're of Russian ancestry. They're of Russian descent.
Yes,
it's amazing to me that people don't know that the majority of the population of Ukraine is Russian, and the other half the population of Ukraine, or not half, the other 35% or so, is of Polish descent because Ukraine used to be part of Greater Poland.
Yes. So in a way, if you can just imagine, you know, you had, you know, millions of, and I forget in Putin's speech, he talked about how many, I think it was 25 or 30 million Russians when they basically ended the Cold War and they withdrew back to the Russian borders. They said they basically left, I think, 25, 30 million Russian people outside their borders. And this is one of the reasons they had always financed Ukraine and helped them out with subsidies and everything, because they had so many Russian people living there. So in a way, attacking these Russian people is an attack on Russia. And this is why they said, we've got to make Russia have to come in and cross the border. We've got to threaten them and I think Russia would do that if they saw Kiev violate the ceasefire to the extent that they were really going to try to roll up. And that would just blow, because in a way they've ignored Minsk anyway, which they can do because the Western powers aren't doing anything about it.
And hey, Jim, we're out of time. We got the break right on us here. You want to stay on for the next few minutes, or are you done for the day?
We're done for the day, and we covered it. And I'll let you guys do your question and answer.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim Dean, for joining us. Have a good evening. Take care.
I enjoyed. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Anyway, welcome back, everyone. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com. Also on freedomslips.com, Studio B Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, March 8th, 2016. And for this hour, we're going to be taking callers. So let me give out the dial-in number. If anybody got the gumption to call in, number is 310-421-4053. And again, I'll talk real slow, but you have to grab a pen or pencil and a piece of paper and write it down. The number is area code 310-421-4053. And, you know, folks, we are talking with Jim Dean here, and the situation in Ukraine is, whenever I first got there, my first trip, I couldn't believe that the housing that was there was armored up as heavily as it was with, I kid you not, inch-thick steel plate doors. That's your outer door. And then you have an inner door that's wooden. So when you're in the house, the wooden door is closed. You don't see that steel door. But when you're in the hallway, that's all you see is these steel doors that look like they belong on bank vaults or something. That's no joke. I will sign an affidavit to that, because that is what I saw and witnessed directly firsthand on my trips over there. But anyway, one of the things I want to talk about today here is Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump, I tell you, the more the Republican establishment rallies against him and tries to stop him from being the front runner, the more I am prone to support him.
because I know for a fact that the Republican establishment is a bunch of crooks who are on the take from the likes of Sheldon Adelson and AIPAC and Goldman Sachs and the whole Israel lobby, okay? So if they're against Trump, that must mean that Trump is bad for them, okay? And if Trump is bad for them, that means Trump must be good for me, because these guys have done nothing good for me in the last 30 years. I mean, since Reagan died, or Reagan was president. That's the last time they did anything good happen that benefited the American people. And then that was all done on a credit card that we have to, that our grandkids are going to end up having to pay off. But if Trump is, if they're so afraid of him, if they're so fearful of him, you know, they got a lot to hide. You know, they got this whole 9/11 problem still out there that hasn't gone away yet. That we don't. I mean, anybody with an IQ above room temperature doesn't buy the official story. Okay. Now there's 15 different variations on what could have happened, but the one thing that hasn't happened is that nobody's picked up the perpetrators and asked them directly. Under oath, under waterboard, for instance. Let's treat Cheney like he treated the prisoners at Gitmo. These guys haven't, you know, any mysteries that are surrounding about how it was done, the perps will be glad to tell us once we've waterboarded them. I promise you, they will. We're not playing games here. So that's one of the reasons they're so afraid of Trump. There's a multitude of reasons they're so afraid of Trump, because this has been one great scheme to fleece the people of this country, everything they've worked for their entire lives, and not just this life, but for generations. People in this country have been taken advantage of. And so the more shrill I hear the news media talk about Trump, the more shrill I hear the Republican establishment talk about Trump, the more favorable he becomes in my eyes. That's the effect that they want to get out of me is not the effect that they're having. They're trying to sell fear. Is like the Republican Party is a trusted brand? No, it's not a trusted brand. They're the ones who bought you NAFTA. They're the ones who brought you GATT. They're the ones who gave China most favored nation status. And I'm a lifelong Republican. Do I believe in lower taxes? Yes, I do. Do I believe a good job is the best welfare program possible? Absolutely. I believe these things. I believe in many, many, many of the conservative principles that are out there. I don't believe we should have a welfare system. I think it encourages dysfunction in our society. I don't want to see anyone starve in the streets, but I don't want to see, you know, third and fourth generations now living off welfare. I think anybody should, if you can't get it together after 10 years, a 10-year lifetime welfare benefit. I mean, if your job went overseas, if you're falling on hard times, everybody needs help for whatever reason, sometime or another, and everybody should get it. But you shouldn't make it a lifestyle choice to where you forego gainful employment in order to sit on the sofa and watch Oprah. Those aren't the things that should be happening. And, Trump's talk about the illegals and how they need to go home. I agree. The illegals need to go home because they damage our most vulnerable. Our least capable people are the ones who are competing for these entry-level jobs with the illegals who are here, who will work cheaper than they will because they don't mind living 15 or 20 to a two-bedroom apartment illegally, like they do everything else illegally. But anyway, I'm the more that goes on, the more I'm becoming a fan of Trump. And I wasn't at the beginning. I thought he had a lot of bombast. I still think he does. I could criticize some of his debate performances where I think he could have stated some other things much more elegantly than he did. But, so far he seems to be like the only man among the midgets. Kasich, I have to compliment him on how he's conducted himself. He has not reached down to the depth, as low as Rubio and, Cruz have. That's the other thing. Cruz, is he even eligible to run? Born in Canada with a Puerto Rican father, And maybe an American mother. I'm not sure. I don't know what his thing is, but I think he needs to be examined very closely. We can't afford to have two presidents back to back who may not be eligible to serve the office. Because if it ever, let's go back about that, because if it ever is found out that Obama was never eligible to be president, every law that he signed then by default is invalid. So we've got some interesting situations. We've got some interesting stuff coming up here. Anyway, the dial-in number, once again, 310-421-4053. Again, one more time, grab a pen, grab a paper if anybody wants to call in. If nobody calls in, I'll hang up too. But the number is 310-421-4053. And I like to open up the lines of callers intermittently here because I like to hear what people say. I want other people's opinions on these things. Is it just me or is it widespread? Is my viewpoints, are they valid or do other people share them? That's kind of what I want to find out here. That's why I open the lines up. But see, here's the thing. If the Republican establishment, if Trump's got a majority, if Trump is in the lead, whether he's got the nomination locked up by the convention or not, if they try to steal the nomination from Trump, the Republican Party is going to put itself back into the Stone Age. You know, right now, guys like me, I've been a lifelong Republican, and I can't stand the Republican Party. Can't stand it. I don't have a party. My party was hijacked by the Israel lobby. My party was hijacked by the gangster Sheldon Adelson. My party was hijacked by Goldman Sachs, okay, for the things that I believe in. Like I said, lower taxes. Best welfare program is a good job. You keep people working. That gives them self-worth. These type of core fundamental conservative issues. I'm not hard-hearted, but I like the welfare system where generations can live on it. The Democrats are certainly not an alternative for me because they seem to be the party of those who need the government to survive, not the party of those who produce to create the surplus that allows the government to exist. You know, they're always there voting for their own increase in this benefit or that welfare handout or something else. I just don't buy that. Okay, we've got area code 781. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Mike. This is Cliff Hoff.
Hey, Cliff, how are you?
Name? Very low, thank you. I was calling to chat with you because you wanted somebody to chat with.
You bet. So what's on your mind?
All of it. The gold-silver ratio, you know, the gold-silver ratio is going out. I don't know what's going on with the economy at all. But this election we got here, I didn't vote in the primary, the caucus, they call it. They're standing in line for too long. Sanders took every county.
Let me point something out here for as far as Trump goes. The caucus states where the caucuses are dominated by Republican insiders, that's where Cruz and Rubio seem to do well. The primary states where anybody can go out and vote, any regular party member can vote, Trump is taking those walking away. I think that's just an interesting observation.
Yeah, me too. I've been watching that also, and the crossover votes too.
Yeah, I mean, where was it? Virginia, I guess, ran out of ballots for Republicans because they had so many crossovers for Democrats wanted to vote for Trump. I mean, that's a good sign. See, the American people no longer have a political party of either stripe that represents them. We've been hijacked.
I believe that I read in the Iowa caucus, the very first caucus, that entire stacks of ballots was stolen off of the tables, and people wanted to vote for Trump didn't have paper to write their vote on. Never investigated. What's with that? Never investigated.
Well, you know, like I said, the Republican Party, the Republican establishment, doesn't want Trump. They're out to stop him any way they can. And he's a phenomena, and they're being thwarted, by his personality, by his smart guy, his cunningness. I mean, they haven't been able to stampede this guy yet. Any lesser man, they probably would have rolled already and had him out of there.
We've got the stalking horse part to worry about now. I mean, is he in there just to drop out just before the election, like Kucinich did before California? Is he just going to leave it?
Who are you talking about as a stalking horse?
Trump.
Trump? I don't think so. I think he's going to win the thing. I think he's going to walk away with it. And I tell you what, wouldn't it be
somebody's
going to
shoot him.
Well, you know what? That's the risk that every office holder needs to face. If they don't have the same commitment to put their life on the line for this country, like we ask of all of our military, all of our active duty, we ask them to be willing to put your life on the line for this country, our elected officials should have the same level of commitment.
I agree, and I believe the citizens, if Trump is assassinated before he makes his run, the citizenry of this country ought to stand up en masse and just take it over right now.
I would agree with that, but that's why I think that Trump ought to name Ben Carson as his running mate. And do it early.
I was thinking Bernie Sanders.
You know, Bernie would be a good second choice. But I like Ben Carson better.
Look at the Trump-Bernie Sanders thing. If Trump decides that he's got the nomination and he wants to make a vice president and Hillary is going to beat Sanders, I mean, they're going to cheat their way through that. But if Trump reached across the aisle and took Sanders under and said he's going to be an equal part of my government, he's going to balance me, he's been in the Senate, he's got the experience, he can guide me on the foreign policy, he'll mellow me out. That would unify the country right there in a heartbeat.
I think it would. I like Carson for a lot of the same reasons. I like Carson because he is a real conservative, number one. And number two, he would peel off enough black voters in the general election, I think, that would help Trump. And he's also the other outsider there. Everybody else who's up on the stage are insiders. So if they assassinated Trump, a guy like Carson would not go along with it like Cruz or Rubio would. It helped cover it up the way LBJ covered up Kennedy's murder. So I think Carson would be a good choice for those reasons. But like I said, either one would be a good choice. If Hillary's going to do her best to cheat her way into the nomination and to shortchange Sanders, could you imagine a guy who would be more loyal than him to Trump? I think it's a brilliant move.
I don't think it'll happen. It seems too logical.
Well, you know, but wait a minute. Trump is not your garden variety politician out there. He's something different. And boy, did I ever love Newt Gingrich saying that the reason the establishment's afraid of him is because he's not a member of the secret society. He's not been through the initiation rites. Come on, guys. If they're that afraid of him, that means he's good for us. You know, the more terrified they are of him, the better he is, because maybe we might get somebody to help do some house cleaning around here, and he'd have the whole nation behind him backing him.
Well, a change in direction, any direction right now, I think is a benefit, because I think we're on the highway to hell.
Oh, I agree. All right, I'll give you another minute here to finish up your comments. I got other callers holding. So,
well, I'll leave off now then, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right. Hey, thank you for the call. All right. We got 770. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mike. It's Fred from Georgia. How are you doing?
Hey, Fred. I'm doing okay. How about you?
Doing pretty well. Glad I got a chance to catch a show tonight. I'm as you describe, I'm finding myself at first showed no interest in him at all. And the more he enrages the establishment, the more obvious it becomes. I had a really good comment today, and that was think back at the last election when you had, I think one of the most important things for the oligarchy to get going was some sort of national health system to siphon money off. And then you had it stacked with Romney and Obama. So it doesn't matter who would win. And I think you're right on the trade thing here. You know, they're just fanatically against Sanders and Trump. And the only common thread they have is they're against these trade deals. So I think they're really needing to do the trade deals. And I don't want anybody to stop that.
Well, I think we need to renounce and get out of those trade deals. I mean, they've done so much damage to working class America here. I mean, it's incredible how bad they've hurt this country. And then you have this you know, Hillary standing up there saying, "Oh, I'm going to support these free trade deals. These are good for America." Really good for who in America? Not the working class stiff out there like me.
No, and not even the businesses. Only the few businesses that participate really get money from that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really glaring, obvious when he states it. You know, I think that's one of the most interesting things is if he hadn't come in the race, you know, that he'd be talking about immigration, you know, that he'd be talking about trade deals, and quite a few other things. And you know, now that the ice has been broken, and the other people have to comment, they're just stepping all over themselves, trying to figure out what they can say and get away with. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing of it is, I think Trump holds back on a lot of things. I think he bites his tongue when he talks about illegal immigration. He knows that's a hot button issue. But you know, the wall, in my opinion, the wall's irrelevant. We don't need a wall. What we need to do is enforce the laws that we have in this country. And if you're somebody who hires an illegal immigrant, you're going to be facing 6 months in prison and a $10,000 fine. And I don't care if you're Marriott Corporation or Tyson Foods, or I don't care if you're my neighbor three doors down who hires Lupita to come in and clean twice a week. I don't care. If you hire them, you ought to pay the price. You ought to pay the penalty and find, you know, because those jobs will still be there. If my neighbor still needs her house cleaned, she can hire an American-born person and pay them a decent wage to do it.
Absolutely. And that's going to be the pain we all have to go through once the ultra cheap imports dry up. They'll either dry up because we start doing fair trade, or they'll dry up because our dollar devalues. It doesn't matter which one. We may as well go the fair trade route so we have jobs.
Well, I'd rather go the fair trade route. And I tell you what, one of the things that I've talked about this on the radio before, one of the things I would do immediately, anything that's not manufactured in this country, I don't care if it's manufactured by General Motors, I don't care if it's made by Apple Computer, I don't care if it's made by Caterpillar Tractor, if it's a bolt, if it's a component, if it's a touch screen, I don't care what it is, if it's not made in this country, 45% at the gate, baby, port of entry, you owe us 45% on what the retail value of that thing is right now. Otherwise, you'll take it back to China or Mexico or wherever it comes from.
And that would require no new law. That is the only legal form of taxation they have at that level anyways.
Absolutely. Oh, and then do you know what you do? With all the money you make off the tariffs, you abolish the IRS and you let everybody keep everything they earn. What a novel concept. You know, so what the price of a flat screen TV goes from $900 up to $1,350. So what? You get to keep everything you make, because every week, if you're grossing $2,000 a week at work, you're probably seeing $1,300 of it. You're losing $700 right off the top. And just imagine getting to keep that money every week that goes by.
And that's how it should be. I mean, you know, and as far as, you know, you mentioned Bernie Sanders before, and as far-fetched as that may sound, I watched the debate the other night because my daughter loves him, and I do find there are valid complaints. He's just as much against Australia. You know, if you had Bernie as VP, I don't think it's a smart move. He'd lose the Republican base, but just absent that, right, it's a smart move, because nobody, if we're going to have socialized whatever, which we do, we may as well have somebody who cares about having it run right in second place.
Well, you know what? You know, Obamacare started out okay. But once the lobbyists got involved from the big pharma companies, from the American Medical Association, from, big pharma, AMA, insurance companies, once they got involved in it, the legislation changed radically. And that's when Nancy Pelosi said, well, if you want to know what's in it, you got to read it, because nobody wanted to read the 2,700 pages that became Obamacare. These things are they're obscenities. This isn't a law. This isn't how it's supposed to work. The insurance company shouldn't have the ability to write their own ticket whenever we pass legislation supposed to benefit people. Neither should Big Pharma. You know, these things, you know, these things matter. These things count. And, you know, we just need to do a better job of managing our government. We've done a terrible job because we've allowed them to divide and conquer us.
You remember back when Newt Gingrich was in Washington, contract with America and all that.
Yep.
I can't say I trust him because of the company he keeps. But one thing that they tried to pass was that no legislation should be more than 4 pages long and should have at the top what provision of the Constitution it gets its authority from. And that's really kind of the direction we have to head.
I think that's a very, very valid point. I mean, no more than 4 pages in length, and where does this draw its constitutional authority? Because these guys make this stuff up, and it's an obscenity, and we the people are tired of living under it. I'm sorry. I want a set of rules and legislation that I can understand, not stuff that's lost in there that you know they've inserted 15 pages in here because it's going to benefit some Fortune 50 company. That's not how our government works. As it is, we've got the biggest bribery scandal going on ever in the entire history of humanity.
Yeah, you're so right. Now, when you were running for governor, did you have the chance to get any insight on some of the upper? I'm specifically curious about Kasich. You know, at the time I watched him, he seemed like he was a fairly decent guy, was trying to balance the outflows, but the company he keeps is pretty bad.
Well, you know, if you're going to be in politics, if you're going to be involved, you're going to be part of it. You know, that's why we need to clean house, get rid of all of them. Because if hypothetically, if I was elected governor, do you know who I'm going to have to lay down and do business with? John McCain. Well, if you lay down with a dog, you're going to get fleas. You know, it's just kind of how it is. And, you know, I like to think of myself as being a pretty upstanding guy. I try to. I've got my flaws. Hey, I admit it. You know, I'm not perfect. I'll never claim that. But if you lay down with a dog like McCain, you're going to get fleas. If I was going to be governor of Arizona, I had to deal with that jackass. I mean, you know, I mean, like it or not, I would have had to deal with that jackass about things that were of interest to the people of Arizona, things that mattered to them.
And going back to a few things you said earlier, it speaks volumes that a person has to be more worried about getting shot by doing what's right for the American people than being shot for being a criminal. It's a target-rich environment if we're going after criminals.
Well, it is, and you make a very good point. And like I said, the lesson of JFK has not been lost on Trump. And that's why I think that he understates things. I think he goes along with the wall because the wall is a concept that everybody can say, okay, well, fine, they're here, we can deal with them, we still have our cheap labor. But if you would say something radical like, you know what, we're going to start enforcing the laws on the books, and we're gonna send out law enforcement and auditors to go to Tyson Foods and go through their personnel records, and everybody who doesn't have legitimate ability to work in this country, we're going to pick them up. And for everyone that's on the payroll there at Tyson Foods, we're going to pick up their board of directors, and we're going to pick up their top 50 managers, and we're going to give them time in jail, 6 months for each offense. So if they've got, 1,200 of them working there, that's 600 years in prison these guys are going to have to share, plus $10,000 fine. So that's another 100, forget the math. I'm slipping a decimal point here, but 1,200 times 10,000, that would be what, $120 million? That'd be a nice little slap on the wrist. Let the shareholders worry about that for a change. And once the shareholders start taking haircuts because of management breaking the law, then maybe we'll get better management in this country that will enforce our laws and not be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah, I agree. At first, I was very suspicious of Trump because he is an oligarch kind of guy. The more I listened to him, the more it sounded like he was actually sincere. But then I started thinking, he's not involved in overseas trade, overseas manufacturing. He's all real estate. You know, his perspective on these trade deals is going to be quite different from a multinational corporation. there was a video of him on YouTube where he was at a congressional hearing. This is 1996, and he came across as extremely confident, extremely smart, and very reserved. And it makes me really wonder about what you said, playing it down. How much of this is for the cameras?
Well, that's it. I mean, like I said, the lesson of JFK has not been lost. If he comes out before he's elected and says too much how he's going, things that business is going to take as a threat. You know, I mean, you think Marriott's not going to panic if they start enforcing the laws that are on the books about illegal immigrants? You think that these companies who've got major workforce that doesn't belong in this country and who's working here illegally, they're going to panic. And they're going to say, well, my God, we're going to have to raise wages. We won't be able to get people to work for minimum wage anymore. We're going to have to start paying people, you know, 15, 18, 20 bucks an hour just to get them to clean hotel rooms because we don't have the illegals to take advantage of. Anyway, you want to hang on over the break?
Sure, I'll hang on for a minute, thanks.
All right, great. We'll be right back, folks, right after this short break. Stick with us. Well, good evening. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris, broadcasting on www.veteranstoday.com, also on freedomslips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Tuesday, March 8th, 2016, and we're taking callers for this last segment of the show. The dial-in number is 310-421-4053. Again, 310-421-4053. And let's return to the caller we had in Brazil. Well, welcome back. How are you?
Good. How's it going, Mike? One of the things that, I've got to say at this point, I think Trump's probably the only person that I would see as possible for doing some good. You know, you're the first person I heard say Ben Carson would make a great running mate. I think that's probably true. I think Ben is pretty, maybe too malleable and too easily frightened, but maybe I'm reading him wrong. He'd be a great political choice.
Here's what I see with Trump with that. I mean, could you imagine a Trump Carson ticket? And you have two words: competence under Trump's name, compassion under Carson's. I mean, that's a powerful billboard or slogan or commercial, whatever you want to put it up there. But competence and compassion, Trump Carson ticket.
And it pretty much knock out the racist card now, wouldn't it?
It would. And boy, by the way, did you like the cheap shot that they threw at the media? They keep trying to dig it up with, well, David Duke says he supports you. And you know what? So what? I'll take any vote I can get if I'm running for office. I don't care whose vote it is. I want every vote. You didn't hear Obama putting down the Black Panthers, did you? I mean.
No, all these guys that reacted to this stuff were like rats in a maze. Anyway, if you were to actually read David Duke's current opinions, he's nothing like the KKK. I'm not saying I support him, but I'm saying that he's not what he's being portrayed as. I even read on Bloomberg today that they were, comparing Trump to a fascist because he had people go raise their hands and say, hey, vote for me tomorrow. When you're missing the whole point of it, fascism is the fusion of government and business. And the TPP is fascism.
I'm glad you brought that up because they're talking about Trump raising his hand to get people to say, I swear I'll vote for Donald Trump next Tuesday, okay? And they're trying to equate that to the Nazi salute. Wait a minute. Everybody in every courtroom, put your hand on the Bible, raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear? That's what this is. And that tells you how desperate these clowns are. They're desperate. They're scared to death that Trump's going to get in office and he's actually going to do something that's good for the country and good for the American people. It's unbelievable to me that they're trying to equate raising the hand the same way you would if you're on the Bible, if you're being sworn in to a Nazi style salute. I can't believe it. I mean, you talk about desperate. That is an act of desperation. And your point about the TTTP being the ultimate in fascism, yes, it is. It'll eliminate the sovereignty of every country that signs it.
Yeah, it's unbelievably bad. And I'm just more shocked by anything of the people that respond to this stuff online. You know, they just say, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican. And they just assume that since some expert told them that it's racist or fascist or whatever, they go, oh, yeah, it must be. These people don't think. They have no clue.
Well, the thing of it is, so, you go back to the TTTP. I mean, you know, did NAFTA help you?
Oh, yeah, great.
Did NAFTA help your job? Did GATT help you? Did giving China most favored nation do anything for your career? Did it help your career path in any way, shape, or form? Didn't help me. Put me out of business. I mean, is what it did for me.
And my company just went through a major inversion. And I think this is the real issue. I think it's an issue they do not want to talk about.
Well, of course they don't, because it's going to be more downsizing for U.S. companies and greater profitability for the shareholders. And if you look what's gone on in the stock market, the retail investors are out of it. They got skimmed too many times. They've been fleeced too many times. Goldman Sachs front running. You know, not many people manage their own portfolios these days. Let's just say it. Very, very, very few. Okay, mutual funds, ETFs, all that type of stuff. There's other vehicles out there for that. But the control of all of these corporations is now in fewer and fewer hands than ever before. Fewer people control the boards. Fewer people vote the shares. The retail investors are gone. I remember back when I was a kid, my granny said, hey, I bought 50 shares of Coca-Cola stock. People don't do that kind of stuff anymore. Nobody goes out and buys. Let me rephrase that. Very few people go out and buy shares of individual companies anymore. They invest in funds. And those fund managers have gotten more and more powerful. But who do they work for? Who runs them? And these are the onions you have to peel. You have to keep peeling the onion until you get down to a level to where you can recognize it for what it is.
You're right. Absolutely right. It's like all the type of thing. Follow the money. It really is. Just plain simple.
And I got to tell you, I am delighted that the mainstream media, that the Republican establishment is so appalled by Trump. They're so afraid of him. And that tells me that he's probably the right guy for me to vote for, because everything that they do, that's if it's good for them, it's bad for me. If it's good for me, it's bad for them. So I want to do stuff that they don't like. And if they don't like Trump, I love Trump.
That's probably the best honest indicator you can find. Did you see the video by Judge Jeanine?
I absolutely did. God bless her. She came out and called it. She saw it. I'm sure probably going to get fired tomorrow. But boy, that was a hard hitting video. I mean, and here's the other thing that's going to happen. If they torpedo Trump at the convention and he doesn't get the nomination, every Trump supporter out there, they're not going to vote down the down ticket people. Why would you vote for a Republican congressman when they just, politically assassinated the guy you were supporting for president? Why would you support a governor? Why would you support a senator? Why would you support anybody who has anything to do with the Republican Party for the next 50 years if they're going to steal the election and defy the will of the people?
You won't. That's just to show that winning isn't really their priority. It's not. Well, not the leadership. They don't really care about winning. They care about control.
They absolutely do care about control. But what will they have to control if they screw Trump over? I could see the Democrats taking the House. And maybe 70% of it, 80% of it. So you have a small minority of Republicans left in there. And I could see them also doing the same on the Senate side. And the Republican Party will, excuse my French here, but they're going to step on their dick so hard they're never going to be right.
No, and you know, I think that there's got to be a lot of bribery and a lot of blackmail going on and a lot of people scared. You know, these people, some of them were ideologues from the beginning, and they started out well. But you know what? They, when the push comes to shove, they just can't find the courage to do what's right. It makes me wonder.
You know, it does. And I don't know. I mean, you know, that's the thing. If you take a bribe, you're owned. If you're human compromise, you're owned. And I think that many, many of our politicians who may have gone there with good intentions have been compromised. And I don't think we can trust any of them. I think we need a clean house. And one of the best ways we could do this would be take all the money out of campaign finance, make the largest donation, whether you're a citizen or whether you're a corporation, make it $100. That's as much as you can give in a political season. And that's to all candidates. $100.
And like you're standing like Bernie Sanders, and you know what? It's a good idea.
I mean, I'm not saying all of Bernie's ideas are bad. I mean, because
I know, mine either. I was surprised. I really like some of them.
You know, I mean, and they're not, and I can see why he is so appealing to the youth of this country. I mean, the Republican Party right now has nothing to offer anybody. I mean, they have become the party of organized crime. They are owned by Sheldon Adelson, who is a gangster. I'm sorry, they want to say that he's a gambling, a casino magnate. Well, he also runs casinos. He does money laundering. He does drugs, human trafficking, prostitution. I mean, you can go to his casino in Macau, and you can buy yourself a 14-year-old girl to be with for the night. You know, that's who that guy is. And this is who's trying to buy our presidential candidate. That's who Rubio and Cruz are sucking up to. You know, come on. That these are not the guys who are fit to run this country.
Yeah, and, you know, Trump missed a very good opportunity the other night when he was dinged for writing Clinton's campaign check, which I think was bad judgment. That bothers me. But, you know, his perfect comeback line would have been, yeah, but I'm more than making up for it by spending, you know, $12 million of my own money to get her out of the office.
here's the deal. You know, if I'm a CEO and I run a company, and let's say I run a Fortune 500 company, there's guys on both sides of the aisle who I'm going to have access to because I can't have them angry with me or my company. I want them favorable to me and my company. So I'm going to do everything I can do. I'm going to support them politically on both sides of the aisles to as not to alienate either side. Because if the Republicans are voted out next year and the Democrats come in and I've been an ideologue about this and not pragmatic, I'm gonna get hammered. I'm gonna get hammered for that.
I never thought of it quite exactly like that, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Well, but that's what these guys have to do. They don't have a choice. You know, it's the discussion we had on the air a week or two ago talking about the bureaucrats. The bureaucrats view the politicians as being temporary. I'm a bureaucrat. I'm going to have a 30 or 40 year career here. You're a congressman. You've got to rewin your seat every 2 years. Chances are I'm going to be here much longer than you are. So don't tell me what to do. You know, that's kind of how it is. And you know, as a CEO who needs to advance his company's position, whether you're in pharma or defense or whatever, you have to take care of both sides of the aisle. And that's what Trump was doing when he gave money to Hillary Clinton. He's making sure that he has access. Making sure that when he needs that political favor, it's there for him.
Yep, that's a sad state of affairs, but you're right. When you can legislate everything, they can charge you for everything.
And that's what they do. That is exactly what they do. And, you know, if you want a meeting with Hillary was a senator, if you want a meeting with her, say, well, yeah, I know you've got this bill coming up. I'd like you to look at this 20-page addendum. I'd like you to insert in it someplace. That would be worth a $50,000 campaign contribution. I have my checkbook right here. You know, yeah. Think about it.
Are you feeling comfortable that Trump's not just another plant at this point?
You know, I don't trust anybody. Okay.
I don't either. That's the sad part.
I don't trust any of them. I don't trust any of them. I've seen too much. I am hoping Trump is the real deal. Am I convinced he is? I hope he is. But you know what? I can't support Cruz. Cruz is everything that's wrong with the political process. He's the first one to go slimy and dirty. You know, I mean,
he's also very CFR and pro-war.
And his wife works for Goldman Sachs. Okay, let's do the math here, folks.
That's enough right there. I mean,
You know, he's not the right guy. I mean, Rubio, he's a friggin' lightweight. I mean, you know, he couldn't wrestle his way out of a wet paper bag. I mean, this guy is not up to the challenge or the stress of being the president of the United States. Just doesn't have it. And I will compliment Kasich on how he has conducted himself throughout the debates. He has been the one guy who's focused on issues, not on disparaging other candidates, but issues only. And, I'm not a Kasich fan, but I think he's conducted himself in an exemplary manner.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if Trump and Kasich have not already been talking, which kind of makes me worry because that's like Kennedy and JFK in some sense. But I think Kasich's basically a decent guy and not the guy like the JFK was. So,
well, you know. The thing is, I look at the JFK situation. You know, he had Johnson forced on him at the convention. He did not want Johnson. He hated Johnson. They didn't get along. They didn't like each other. Hated each other. And Johnson was more than happy to see JFK get his head blown off and then go ahead and enforce the cover-up. You know, more than happy. And so that's one of the other reasons that I think Ben Carson is a good choice for Trump, because he's an outsider. He's never held political office. He's got some good conservative principles, so he can bring the conservative base of the party. He can probably peel off, 10-12% of the black vote because he's black. And they would have nothing to gain by killing Trump if another outsider was going to come in there. But if it's an insider, if it's a Cruz, a Rubio, Kasich, any of the guys who, any of the 17 that started out on that panel except Carson, who all have political experience, they'll all sell their eye teeth in order to get the next job, because that's the job they wanted in the first place. And they'll look the other way, and they'll do just like Lyndon Johnson did, and cover up the murder, and say it was maybe not Lee Harvey Oswald, but Joe Michael Clampton. You know, who knows who it'll be.
Yeah.
But they'll go along with the lone gunman thing, because they do the same thing every time. You know, I'll give you an example. The Gabby Gifford shooting, when Judge Rolls was assassinated, they came out with the same sad story. Oh, it was a lone gunman. This guy, he's just not right. He's this and that and the other thing. I'm sorry. I know that area. I've been there. I went to undergrad school in University of Arizona in Tucson. I know exactly where they were at. That took at least a 3-man team plus a spotter.
Yeah, people are not buying that anymore. I think people are starting to really wake up to the ridiculousness of the same story over and over. And unfortunately, I don't think they know another one. But the more they kind of keep doing this stuff, the more obvious it becomes.
Well, and that's the problem. But it doesn't matter. If you're dead, you're dead. You know, if they've taken you out, they've taken you out. And if they have the cooperation of your successor in covering up the murder, then all the better. Because, hey, if hypothetically, let's say Trump picks Cruz. Sorry, Ted, let's bury the hatchet. You're my VP. Cruz is going to cover up whatever he has to cover up, because if he doesn't, they'll kill him too. And so he'll go along. And so, I think Carson's the only guy. I think that's the only logical choice for Trump is Carson. And it does him good politically. I mean, it gives him a claim to steal some of the black vote that the Democrats think is their property. And like I said, it's a great campaign slogan, Trump, Carson, competence, compassion.
I think you're right. And quickly then, who would be your second choice? To say that's not possible for some reason. What do you think would be a next smart move?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. And you were the earlier caller, I forget, but the one who said Bernie Sanders would be a good choice. Because you'll say, look, I'm going to reach across the aisle. This is not about divisiveness. This is about governance. This country's in trouble. Now, Bernie and I don't agree on everything, but we agree on that the country's in trouble, and we're both going to work hard to do what's right for the country, do what's right for the people. And I think that would be my second choice would be Bernie Sanders if I was Trump.
Yeah, but I think most of the current sheepish Republicans wouldn't know what to do. That would probably...
At that point, it wouldn't matter. You know why? Because if Hillary screws Bernie out of the nomination, all those Democrats who are Bernie fans are going to vote for him. and all all the Republicans who are Trump fans are going to vote for him. And so you would win by a landslide.
And the next year start a new party.
And next year start a new party. You know, the America First Party or something along those lines. That name isn't taken already. But you know what you would have is two guys here who are working for the same goal. I mean, I don't have to agree with you about everything, but if we're working toward the same goal, you'll at least listen to what I think is good for the country, and I'll at least listen to what you think. And we may disagree about the means, but we don't disagree about the goal.
That would be entertaining.
Well, I think it would do so much good to heal this country, and I think it would break the back of the oligarchs.
Yeah, I think you're right. I like the second choice. Good one.
You know, I mean that's Carson first, but I'm staying along Republican Party lines. But if I had to reach across, I think Bernie Sanders would be a great running mate for Trump. And I tell you what, I think it would be one ballsy move. Holy mackerel! I tell you what, the Republican establishment wouldn't know whether to shit or go blind, and neither would the Democrats. They would not know what to do. They'd be running around like their hair's on fire.
That would be the most entertaining thing I've ever seen in my life, I bet
you. You know, here's the thing to remember. If the establishment loves it, it's bad for us. If the establishment hates it, it's good for us. You know, I mean, that's kind of what it's come down to. It's come down to we've got criminal oligarchs who run the country trying to tell us things that are good for them are good for us, and they're not. The things that are good for them are terrible for us. And it's about time we wised up and say, you know, if they don't like it, we're probably going to like it a lot. That's as simple and succinct as I can put it. I don't know how else to make it any more understandable.
I can't believe that he had the balls to come out and say, we should have not gone to Iraq, that we should have left Gaddafi there, we should have left Hussein there, we should leave Assad there. That, to me, speaks some independence that he is not really being led by the nose. That's the one thing that gives me hope.
I just did an interview on Press TV a week or two ago talking about U.S. foreign policy and about the disaster that Iraq was, the disaster that Afghanistan was, the disaster that Libya has been, the disaster of U.S. foreign policy in Somalia. Anywhere the U.S. State Department touches, they have the fecal touch. Everything they touch turns to crap. Okay, and you look at Ukraine, what Victoria Nuland did there, it's turned to crap. Everything they touch turns to crap, and that's not what we want. Do we want a world at war, or do we want a world at peace? Well, there's people out there who profit off of the human suffering of others, and they make a lot of money when there's wars. And there's others of us who don't make money off of war and who have to pay the bill for it so they can get rich. I don't want to make them rich. I want to stay home and stick to my own knitting, you know. But it's time for all of us to kind of rally around. And like I said, if they hate Trump, that means Trump's good for me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got about 2 minutes left. I'll give you the next 2 minutes to make any closing comments or anything else you want. I don't want to cut you off. What else is on your mind?
Well, I think that in general, if let's say he's successful and he can get in, he does seem like someone who's capable of learning and changing his opinion, which of course he gets in trouble for. You know, I think if he can surround himself with the right people to understand the blatant falsehoods that have gone on, he's already mentioned 9/11, but the blatant falsehoods that have gone on getting into all these wars, and that's what makes me hopeful. It's not that I'm anti-security, and I don't think people out there to get us, but I do believe that most of these wars were fought were just for money, and all those other people are being killed for no reason. And I was a big proponent of the Iraq War when it first came out, the Afghanistan War, but I was wrong.
And you know what? I'll have to say the same thing. I was wrong, too, about both of them, because I see what a disaster it's been. There were no weapons of mass destruction. You know, Osama bin Laden didn't do 9/11. That these are all lies. The only thing that happened in Afghanistan is the U.S. now dominates the opium trade around the world. All the heroin comes out of Afghanistan, and they're producing 5,000% more than they were when the Taliban ran the place. And so, like I said, the criminals did these things with the American people's blessing because they lied to us. That's it. Hey, we're out of time. So, I want to thank you very much for calling. Hey, I really appreciate it. Everybody take care. I'll be back on Thursday. Everybody take care. Have a good evening. And remember, if the establishment hates it, means it's good for you. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.